From Eyewitness News, this is Newsmakers.
Welcome to Newsmakers. I'm Tim White. Ted Nisi will join me on the second half. As many of you can see, I'm coming to you from a different location here at Channel 12, and that is because I'm connecting remotely via Zoom with our first half guest, U.S. Senator from Massachusetts, Ed Markey. Senator Markey, it's good to speak with you, and thank you for taking the time.
No, glad to be with you.
So, as many people know, you're being challenged for your seat by Congressman Joe Kennedy of the 4th District in Massachusetts, and we'll certainly get to that in a little bit. But first, let's get talk about news of the week that's affecting a lot of people. We're taping this on a Friday morning. Many people are watching this on a Sunday. But where do things stand right now with the HEROES Act? As many people know, the House passed the HEROES Act last week. Where does it stand? Is there any indication that Majority Leader Mitch McConnell will consider it or offer a different proposal?
Mitch McConnell is absolutely playing hardball. He doesn't want to negotiate right now. He's actually taking things off of the table. He's saying that he doesn't want to extend unemployment benefits. That would be wrong. He doesn't really want to help cities and towns and the states. That would be wrong. That would lead to tremendous layoffs. At the local level, police, fire, teachers, schools, layoffs would be massive. So right now, Mitch McConnell is just refusing to negotiate. He's saying it's going to be a very small package. The HEROES Act obviously is something that matches the magnitude of the problem, $875 billion for cities and towns and for states. It would extend unemployment benefits out to the end of the year. Clearly, we're in an economic catastrophe right now, and this is not going to be over in July. It's going to continue. People are going to need additional assistance. We need more food assistance for people. There's a crisis out there that is unprecedented in terms of people's access to food. Again, he is stonewalling. He's refusing to negotiate. He's saying that it might take another month and a half for any kind of a agreement to be reached. That's going to be too late. People need help right now. So I'm there fighting McConnell, fighting for him to put this funding in place in order to take care of families, in order to take care of workers, hospitals, people who are unemployed. And right now, McConnell is just stonewalling this process.
Well, look, Senator, there's a whole bunch of stuff in that House bill that seemingly has nothing to do with the pandemic, like allowing marijuana businesses to access banking. The House knew it had to get the bill passed a Republican-controlled Senate and signed by a Republican president. Could House lawmakers have carved out legislation that would have been more palatable to the entire Senate?
Well, here's the thing. The scale of the problem is so massive that if we don't provide the funding, there is going to be a healthcare disaster, which turns into a Great Depression level economic disaster for tens of millions of American families. So the HEROES Act actually reflects that in terms of the amount of money we have to put into this system. And if we don't, we're going to go back to Herbert Hoover-like politics for 4 years. And Donald Trump is channeling Herbert Hoover right now. We need an FDR moment here. We need programs that match the magnitude of the problems that we are seeing. And so this House-passed bill and the one that the Democrats in the Senate want to see be enacted, it is a match for the level of the problem. That's why I've actually introduced with Bernie Sanders and Senator Kamala Harris legislation that would give every American $2,000 a month. A couple would get $4,000. They're going to need this money in order to tide them through this healthcare.
Well, I don't think a lot of people would.
Economic crisis.
I don't think a lot of people would dispute the need that you just laid out there. But I'm wondering if you think the House bill gave Mitch McConnell that ammunition. He tweeted out it's a longstanding wish list of items that are completely unrelated to the crisis itself. Would it have been easier if it were a cleaner bill, Senator?
No, because he's saying he doesn't want to help cities and towns. He's saying that he doesn't want to extend unemployment insurance. Those are the core provisions. Those are the core provisions. And to see how great his opposition is, in the last bill we just passed about 3 weeks ago, They didn't want to put in the $75 billion for hospitals and community health centers. They didn't want to put in, they did not want to put in the $25 billion for testing. And we know testing is the key to identifying where this problem is. So just 3 weeks ago was a preview of coming attractions for how now they want to treat people with unemployment insurance in the cities and towns, police, fire, teachers, all having to be laid off because he will not negotiate and he will not put the funding in. So those are the core provisions. He's talking here about some extraneous provisions that we probably could negotiate, but not the central provisions. We cannot in any way allow him to walk away from the plight of these families across across Massachusetts and across the country.
If a different bill comes out of the Senate, Senator, you listed off a lot of items there that are in the current one, you know, funding for state, city, and town beleaguered budgets. There is, of course, hazard pay for frontline workers. You laid out the possibility of another round of rebate checks, $2,000 a month, I think it was your proposal. If another stimulus package were to pass, what's the single most important element to you? What would be the one thing that is non-negotiable?
You can't pick one, but you have to help the cities and towns. You don't want massive layoffs of all the key personnel in cities and towns, as the cities and towns are the front line responders. We have to give more help to hospitals and to community health centers. Ultimately, we want to help these heroes. We want to give them the hazard pay, which they deserve, and extend unemployment insurance. If people think their checks, their unemployment checks are going to be dramatically cut back in July, they know August, September, October, November could be a desperate situation for their families. So again, I just keep coming back to, you know, the magnitude of the problem and how we have to deal with it on all fronts. And that also includes, and I keep repeating it, we need more food assistance for people in our country. The lines are unbelievable as I'm in Revere giving food to people, as I'm in Lynn, you know, helping people. I can see the real pain in the eyes of these families as they are arriving.
I'm sure we're going to pivot back to the pandemic, but as I said at the top of the program, I want to talk a little bit about the campaign you're currently running against challenger Congressman Joe Kennedy. And I should mention we are looking forward to hosting a debate between you and Congressman Kennedy on June 8th, live at 7 o'clock from our studios. It'll be an hour long and commercial free. And look, southeastern Massachusetts can often be overlooked sometimes in statewide races. So we do thank you sincerely for accepting. Now, for many people who are not totally plugged into this race yet, for obvious reasons, this summer is obviously very important for the race as they get to know maybe a little bit more about you and about Congressman Kennedy. They might look at you and say, okay, here's two fairly liberal candidates. Besides the surname, what would you tell people separates you and Joe Kennedy?
Well, I'm leading and delivering on the issues that people care about in Massachusetts and across the country. I've led on the Green New Deal with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to put climate change right up front. It's unleashed a national debate about climate change in a way that we have never seen before. And she and I, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and I, we have pushed that right to the forefront. That's a huge issue, and it's a huge issue for the South Coast. It's a huge issue for the Commonwealth and for the entire country. I've led on the issue of gun violence. My legislation just passed and was signed in December for $25 million so that we can begin the research at the Centers for Disease Control of the causes of gun violence in our society. I've led on Alzheimer's. 5 million Americans have Alzheimer's right now, and 15 million baby boomers will have it. Well, my legislation has created a multi-billion-dollar program to find the cure by the year 2025. As we know, many, many of those who have died are in their 70s and 80s, and we're going to find that many of them had Alzheimer's. So my law requires the NIH to put together a plan to find the cure by 2025 before we have 15 million baby boomers with it. I could go on, but leading and delivering for the state and for the nation is what I have done, and I bring this experience that I have. I'm in Malden right now. I'm in my dining room. I'm in the house where I grew up in with my mother and father, who drove a truck for the Hood Milk Company. My mother had to raise her younger three sisters because my grandmother died when my mother was 17. So I'm here in Malden, and I live in this blue-collar community with the people who are most affected economically, most affected by the coronavirus. And I, every day, take these values I learned at the kitchen table here in Malden, and I bring them to Washington to fight the fights that they would fight if they could be there.
Congressman, Kennedy has sort of a bizarre-shaped district from Brookline. It stretches down through Attleboro, but again, up through the South Coast, which is one of the reasons we're hosting that debate, is a big part of our market is Southern Massachusetts. He's, you know, pretty well known in the 4th Congressional District for obvious reasons. He's been serving there for a bit. When you look at your campaign, you're allocating resources. Are you just going to cede the South Coast to Joe Kennedy?
Oh, no, just the opposite. You know, I've had summits on opioids in Taunton that actually, for the first time, had the word fentanyl ever printed in the Boston Globe. That's back in 2014, and summit after summit on the opioid crisis down in that region. I was able to get $15 million for New Bedford, for 60 new berths for fishermen last year, and a staging area for the construction of the wind industry going off of the coastline. I'm working on the infrastructure committee to find the billions of additional dollars so that we can have South Coast Rail built and completed. So on issue after issue, including the Bourne and Sagamore Bridge, where I fought hard for the funding and the designation by the Army Corps of Engineers to replace those two bridges, I'm going to be coming with a very strong message of what I have led on and delivered for the South Coast of Massachusetts.
And we should point out, as part of the one of the CARES Act packages, I believe you worked to get to the fishing industry some $28 million as part of all the food assistance program. We're hearing, you know, problems about money getting out, be it with stimulus checks and other programs. Do you have any sense right now if that some of that $28 million has made it to the fishing industry yet, or is that still kind of stuck in the red tape of Washington?
Yeah, well, there's two programs. One is a $20 million program to purchase Atlantic seafood, which is going to be very, very important for the New Bedford port. And I fought very hard to get that $20 million so that our fish would be purchased. It's the first time since the 1980s that happened. And another program for $28 million, which can be used for the totality of the fishing industry in Massachusetts. So it's nearly $50 million. So that is now beginning to move its way through the process. Applications can be made, and that will ultimately be processed through and made available for the fishing industry. And I'm very proud of the fight, the work that I did with Congressman Keating, with Senator Warren, in order to secure those victories for New Bedford, for the port of New Bedford. And I'm going to be running on that as well.
We have a few minutes left here, Senator, and I want to touch on this one because you're on the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation. And look, I've seen this year after year, for those living on the South Coast, it seems every campaign season there are new promises about a South Coast rail connecting New Bedford, Fall River, up into Boston, and it just never materializes. Square with the people of the South Coast right now, if you could, Senator. Is this realistic, or is it too steep a hill to climb at this point?
No, I don't think it is. I think that now there's $158 million, which has been designated for the beginning of the South Coast Rail. Again, New Bedford and Fall River are really the only two cities within 50 miles of Boston that are not connected by rail. So we have to bring them into the greater Boston economy. There's no way around it for the long term. And I'm on the Infrastructure Committee. I'm on the Transportation Committee. And from my perspective, we need an incredibly huge infrastructure bill. I worked 4 years ago to put in $5 billion, and that money is in the state of Massachusetts right now, which Governor Baker is using in order to fund transportation projects. We need an even bigger one than the one I was able to help to secure back 4 years ago for Massachusetts, which gives us the resources to build it. But I'm confident that by 2023, that we will have South Coast Rail, and we will have all of these cities finally interconnected with the economy of Massachusetts in a way which isn't just a rail line, but it's a money line. A money line that helps people to be able to take care of their families.
As I said, I want to pivot back to the pandemic, and this will be my final question to you as we're running out of time here. You're a member as well as the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations. A question about China. Many people are frustrated about reports that China misled the world with the pandemic early on. Do you agree that China has been duplicitous? And if so, should the U.S. take any action to punish the country?
Well, one, back on January 23rd, I was the first member of the Senate to actually write a letter to the administration saying, give us the briefing as to what's going on in China. On January 27th, I'm the first member of the Senate to call on the president to name a czar in order to deal with this issue. And that was all reflected in my concern about what were the reports coming out of China at that time. Clearly, if they're in the World Trade Organization, they have to comply with the World Health Organization reporting requirements. So I don't think they did it. I don't think that they were transparent. I don't think that they gave the world the access which was needed in order to identify and sound Paul Revere like the warnings to the rest of the world to take the steps which would be necessary. So I do believe that that we should fully fund the World Health Organization, but we have to press very strongly China that they understand that they have a responsibility to the world. And they did not discharge that responsibility. And I don't think it's even remotely questionable that the consequences could have been much better if we had an earlier warning.
Senator Ed Markey, thank you for the time. I look forward to seeing you in person on June 8th for the debate. Stay safe out there.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. You too.
All right. And when we come back, joining me live from the State House will be Eyewitness News politics editor Ted Nesi for a look back at the week in news. Stay with us. You're watching Newsmakers. Welcome back to Newsmakers. I'm Tim White. As you can see, if you're just joining us, I'm in a different location at Channel 12, and that's because I had a first half guest, Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts, joining me remotely via Zoom. But at least we have some sense of normalcy for Newsmakers. Ted Nesi is live at the State House to talk about this week in news. And Ted, it's Memorial Day weekend. As people watch this, we should point out on WPRI.com, our colleague Eli Sherman has this great chart on what's open and what's not in both Rhode Island and Massachusetts. We urge people to go there. I'm just wondering, as you've been covering the briefings the governor has been doing daily, do you get a sense that there's some tension about this weekend from the governor's office?
Absolutely, Tim. I mean, I think, you know, I said yesterday during our new newscast, it was a beautiful day in Providence. That was Thursday. It's beautiful again today, Friday. And that makes state officials nervous right now. They might personally like the sunshine, but, you know, every day that draws people outside, makes them want to get together, makes them want to have a barbecue, go to a gathering, come to a busy park, go to the beach, creates more opportunity for virus transmission, frankly. And I think, you know, that's sort of the whole question here as they do this phased reopening in Rhode Island and Massachusetts, really all across the country, is, you know, can you slowly take the lid off a little bit, but do it in a way that keeps a virus from taking off? And the flip side is, or do they find that, you know, maybe it doesn't take off the way they expected and they can go a little faster? They're really waiting. But part of the problem is they have to wait really at least two or so weeks from the time they make a change to when they feel confident they could see in the data on cases and hospitalizations, you know, what effect, if any, that's having in the community. So it is a tough balance.
It feels like a year ago, Ted, I know, but Tuesday night, you were here at Channel 12, 7 o'clock, live town hall. We had with all four members of the Rhode Island federal delegation, and I remember being in the studio with you. There was a moment where you had asked a question of Senator Jack Reed about potential aid to cities, towns, and states for their budgets, and he kind of worked around the answer a little bit, but at one moment he said the phrase contingency plan for states, and you and I turned to each other and we realized in that moment that it was a headline. You brought that to the governor at the briefing, I believe, on Thursday. What was her reaction to that?
Well, I mean, first, people have to think about the numbers here. According to the House Finance Committee's fiscal advisor, who gave them a briefing this week, the budget deficit for the current year budget, which ends June 30th, and then next year, the year that starts July 1st, but combined is $900 million. Wow. That's over 10%, I would estimate, of the state-generated revenue, apart from all the federal funding that comes in each year. So it's just a massive hole to fill across, you know, about a third of it, I would say, is in the current year with, you know, 6 weeks left and then the rest next year. Governor Raimondo has said over and over she is still very hopeful that another big federal stimulus bill, spending bill, will come out of Congress. And there's a lot of push from governors all over the country and some senators, including the senators in Rhode Island and Massachusetts, for some unrestricted aid to states to help bail out their budgets, shore them up. But there's no guarantee of that. And that's what Senator Reid was saying on the broadcast. You know, he says, of course, he supports it strongly. He wants more money, et cetera. But, you know, you're not, there's not a guarantee that that is going to happen fast enough for them to get a budget put together for this year, next year, by June 30th, the end of the fiscal year. So the governor's comments at the briefing on Thursday were basically, look, she wants to push the decision as far as she can to wait for Congress. We have seen signs from Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, Leader McConnell, that there could be another bill, but when and how much money, that's really unclear. And so Senator Reid suggested a contingent budget. The governor has suggested doing maybe like a one-month budget or something for July if they think something's coming. But it's not clear legislative leaders will want to go that route. So it's very messy, very difficult, and all we really are certain of right now is there's a huge hole to be filled somehow.
Speaking of messy and difficult, the April unemployment numbers came out 17%. You know, and you and I were talking prior to the show on topics that we were going to touch on, and normally a 17% unemployment rate, we would do a whole show just on that topic alone, and here we are three quarters of the way through Newsmakers, and I'm bringing it up now. You know, I know it's hard when you look at that 17% number, Ted, and you covered the Great Recession as well, where I think we hit 11.3 was the highest during the Great Recession. You know, what do you think is the outlook with a 17% unemployment rate and how the economy was shut off?
Well, it's so hard to say. I mean, you know, there's a lot of pain behind that 17% unemployment rate due to the bills Congress has passed so far, especially the CARES Act, which really bumped up unemployment benefits for a lot of people. You aren't necessarily seeing the strains on as many families because a lot of them have gotten a lot of their income replaced by these benefit programs, though that extra $600 right now only goes till July 31st, so it's only a few months to get people through. Really, it really goes back to the first topic we discussed, Tim. It's the virus. The virus will decide whether governors feel comfortable in Rhode Island, Massachusetts, elsewhere, continuing to open up, allowing more businesses to start up, whether people will be confident to go out to restaurants once outdoor dining resumes, presumably next month. And that's what will lead to more people having jobs again. And, you know, there are some hopeful signs that this could be a relatively quick bounce back. You saw Walmart's earnings report this week. They saw people going out to buy. They didn't seem as scared. But, you know, a 17% unemployment rate that basically happened overnight, we are in uncharted territory, which is why it's so hard to make prediction. But certainly, you'd hope it turns around quickly. But I don't think anyone can promise that that's how the next couple of months are going to go.
Yeah, and in the areas of concern, certainly from the governor's office, retail and the hospitality sector here. And one thing I noticed in my drive home, I think it was last night, leaving Channel 12 and going home, you know, you're always in sort of your own zone when you're in the car, but I noticed for the first time in months a difference, right? I saw restaurants putting tables outside into parking lots, taking over parking spaces in the street and things like that. And I saw patrons out there, and that was when it really first clicked. Oh, we're in a new phase of reopening for me, when I could actually feel it, right? What have you noticed now that we're a couple of weeks into phase one?
Well, I noticed the same thing last night, Thursday night, Tim. I picked up takeout on my way home for my wife and I, and The place where I'd gone a couple times during the pandemic to get takeout on my way home always had been shut down, very quiet. There were people at a bunch of outdoor tables now. That was brand new compared to last week. So you do see those signs. I think you're going to see a lot of people out and about this Memorial Day weekend. The beaches will be opened in a limited fashion on Monday. So you can feel that happening. And I think while, you know, one thing people need to remember is, yes, there were restrictions put in place by the government, serious ones, but we saw people starting to cut back on their activities before there were any official government mandates to do so. You saw restaurant reservations plunge in early March when they were still open. You saw people canceling trips. So part of this is individuals will need to develop the confidence, whatever the governor is saying or the president or whoever, that going out and going to outdoor dining feels safe and comfortable and enjoyable and worth the money, and also, you know, worth any health risk they see. I think you'll see as the weeks go by, you'll see more people, if it goes well, feeling better about that.
Yeah, and it's so hard to predict how people are going to act as the economy starts to reopen. That's sort of the wild card right there. Ted Nesi joining me from the State House so much, and thank you to Senator Ed Markey, our first half guest. I'm Tim White. We'll see you next week on Newsmakers.